And it is 9 a.m. in the West Coast. It is 12 noon in the East Coast, and it's 7 p.m. in Jerusalem, the capital of Israel. Today is Wednesday, September 27, 2017, and this is Orly Benny Davis with Impossible Truth. Today on BBS Radio Studio One, we have our beloved Doug Newsom, one of the twins of the best team in the world that make this BBS Radio work. So I thank you all for coming in, and I hope that this show will make your day. Let's start. We have incredible news today, because just a few hours ago we realized that the Palestinians are going to be a part of the Interpol. You know, when we have justice and order in the world, these days we have none everywhere, and you can witness to it in wherever you are. You know, in America, there is confusion about who is right or who is wrong. In the Middle East, of course, it's a constant conflict. In Europe, they are dismantling and bringing out tons of ideas, agreement. And the rest of the world is watching while, you know, North Korea is acting up. And China is standing by, trying to squeeze the power on them to see if they can make something work. While we're doing that, you know, putting some people in order, that's not a bad idea. And I know that the state of Israel actually refused and didn't like the fact that the Palestinians will become a part of the Interpol. But I think it's a great idea, because any time that, you know, any group of people decide to police themselves, that it's a good thing. It means that they're coming to order. I don't know how Hamas will fit in, but let's have, I have a segment, actually, I can call it number 7. This is just a few hours ago. Let's listen to the world news.
Palestinian territories have joined Interpol as a member state in a vote at the International Police Organization's General Assembly in Beijing. The State of Palestine and the Solomon Islands are now Interpol member countries, the organization said in a tweet. There was no immediate comment on the decision from the Israeli Foreign Ministry. Israel contends that the Palestinian territories are not a state and that it's ineligible for Interpol membership. Under interim Israeli-Palestinian peace deals, the Palestinian Authority was granted limited self-rule in the occupied West Bank and the Gaza Strip. In 2012, the UN upgraded the Palestinian Authority's status to non-member state.
All right, let me give you the problem in this. First of all, the foreign minister of Israel, well, of course, that's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, is supposed to give his comment on this. I'm sure that he's still thinking and contemplating the right answer in this crisis for him. But I say, by all means, be a part of the team. We need some more policing, because they are going wacko over there. But however, they saying that the Interpol can get into the West Bank. The West Bank is that part of disputed territories. Once the Interpol is a part of a disputed territories, which Israel is in control of it by agreement, they cannot actually get into the site, right? They cannot be a part of it, because it's legally is not in the ruling of them. And I have to come back to the original plan of the British mandate to explain to you why it can never be a part of Palestinian state. Let's listen to, you know, my third segment that I collect for you was the Israeli-Palestinian thinker. They're talking about the British mandate, but it's still the basic of the state of Israel, and that's what makes Israel work. Let's listen to it. Let's listen to the fact that, you know, we might have actually a collusion of powers here. So Interpol, they need to back up with, be sensitive. America need to put everybody in check. All right, let's listen to that.
The Allied powers reconvened a year after the Paris meetings in San Remo, Italy, to discuss the mandates for the former Turkish territories. Their decisions in San Remo created a new map for the Middle East. In San Remo, it was decided that the Balfour Declaration would be incorporated into an international treaty called the Mandate for Palestine. Palestine was to be a special case. fundamentally different from the mandates for Syria and Iraq. Understanding the difference between these mandates is crucial to understanding the Zionist claims to Israel-Palestine. The mandates for Syria and Iraq focused on the Arab people actually living in those lands. The mandate for Palestine didn't just focus on the people living in Palestine. Great Britain's responsibility would be to follow through on the promises made in the Balfour Declaration, which applied to the Jewish people worldwide.
According to the Articles of the Mandate for Palestine, the nations of the world and international law recognize the Jewish people's historical connection to Palestine and their rights to reconstitute their national home there.
And it made the Jewish people a recipient of self-determination in Israel-Palestine. The mandate said that the Arabs in Palestine would receive civil and religious rights, but not the political rights of self-determination. The Arab people would receive their political rights in the rest of the Middle East, under the mandates for Syria and Iraq. In San Remo, the Allied powers created mandates that allowed tens of millions of Arabs to gain their freedom from Turkish rule. Now to our next hot topic. When it came to the mandate for Palestine, the Allied powers gave the Jewish people, not the Arabs, prospective sovereignty in Palestine. Was this unjust? The Arabs thought so. They were the majority population there, and had been since the 13th century. The Jewish people had a different perspective. Palestine was their ancient homeland. It had been Turkish territory, not Arab territory, since 1517. And the Arabs were given basically all of the Turks' other territory, except for the small portion given to the Jews. Even Faisal, the representative of the Arab people, excluded Palestine from the territory he requested when he went before the Supreme Council. Still, not everyone was happy. The Arabs living in Palestine, stirred to outrage by Haj Amin al-Husseini, responded with opposition and violent uprisings against the Jews there. The British solution? To partition Palestine and create a new Arab state in East Palestine and a new Jewish state in West Palestine. The newly created Arab state of Jordan was 77% of the territory initially planned for the Jewish national home. In the area that remained, Jewish institution building grew. But so did Arab resistance. In 1936, Haj Amin al-Husseini, now the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, called on Arabs to stop paying taxes to the British government until it stopped Jewish immigration, ended Arab land sales to the Jews, and created an all-Arab government. Because of Husseini's role in inciting the Palestine Arabs, the British government deported him. But it was too late. Thousands of Arabs had been killed or wounded by the British, and the Arab economy in Palestine was crippled. Britain's post-revolt report basically concluded that Arab and Jewish interests couldn't be resolved. It called for quotas on Jewish immigration, restriction of Arab land sales to Jews, and the creation of an Arab agency. The report said the mandate should be terminated and what remained of Palestine must be separated into independent Arab and Jewish states. A second partition of Palestine was in the works. The land recommendation changes were huge. The new Arab state would get 80% of the territory west of the Jordan River and be united with Jordan, leaving only 10% of the land originally set aside for the Jewish national home. Surprisingly, no one accepted the paper, not even the Arabs. And the timing of the paper was tragic. Nazi Germany was moving towards its final solution. Jews in Europe underwent mass extermination over the next 5 years. And British authorities denied entry into Palestine to Jewish refugees hoping to escape the Holocaust. Even after World War II, with hundreds of thousands of Jewish Holocaust survivors stuck in refugee camps, Britain continued restricting Jewish immigration to Palestine. The Zionists were outraged. Attacks on British property followed, and violence between Jews and Arabs intensified. broke after two world wars and having failed to resolve the conflict, in 1947, with tensions escalating, the British government announced that it would ask the League of Nations' newly formed successor, the United Nations, to find a solution for Palestine.
All right. We are back. This is Orly Benny Davis with The Impossible Truth on BBS Radio. I'm so happy to be with you today because we are only a few days before Yom Kippur. It's a day of atonement for the Jewish people, a day that we pray and we ask God for forgiveness. That's why I decided to give you this part of the British Monday to explain to you how much we need to pray for peace. Because when you make sense of things, you need to use the truth, only the truth. And then with the actual facts, you can build on the reality. When the Jewish people got the land in 1920, they got the old Palestine, the one that was taken from the Turks. And the revolt of the Arabs, you know, made the Brits divided. Now, that was with violence that they took a part of the land. We're talking about a huge part of the land. We're talking about 70% that was given and created a new entity called Jordan. Now, I don't understand how in the mathematics of anybody that that's fair. And if it's fair, why they want to split Israel again? Of course, we had war, and in that war, Jordan lost some of the territory, fair and square. She lost it like Ronald Reagan used to say. We won fair and square. So what I want to say is, if there is a Arab state in Palestine, it's called Jordan. I think that a Palestinian needs to take care of that. But the land that was conquered, the land that was lost, is a territory of Israel. It's nothing you can do about it because that's the protection edge, the buffer zone that Israel needs in case somebody decide to attack her. And yesterday we had a very bad attack on one of the gates way to Jerusalem. Three people were killed, you know, with rifles, with guns. They were still staying at the gate. They didn't have any check control that they were supposed to, I guess. And sure enough, somebody came with a gun, a Palestinian that they all knew and worked there and was a part of the community, and decided to take his life and the three other lives, a suicide mission. In a way that gave everybody the sense that we are not protected yet. They're going wacko every second. This is an incredible travesty. You know, the Israeli people cannot take it anymore on that level. And in the same token, we have somebody that is sending to the Oscars. And this BBS radio is from California. And being in California, you know that the Oscars are really important. And one of, the left wing's Israeli apartheid, group decided to make a movie that probably it's a good movie, but the common sense in it is atrocity of the soldiers over Palestinian. And because it's fake news, I would suggest the Oscars board not to even consider it and reject it as it arrives, because the appalling scene outraged many people. And I spoke just now to my friend that used to be the advisor of Prime Minister Sharon, and he told me that he couldn't believe what the story. It's a science fiction, they call it. That's what it is. You know, when you make a movie that it's nothing to do with the truth. So yesterday we have a revelation how we take care of our people and they bring them, they come along, they can work in Israel. And if they want to shoot somebody innocent, civilian, you know, even guard, they didn't even expect it, you can kill them. And on the other end, we're trying to, somebody's sending a movie to the Oscar to show that Israeli are bad. We have a military that is strong, capable, and very, very savvy. It doesn't mess with civilian. It has everything that it needs to win. We don't need to uphold any kind of extreme conduct. So I would call upon the Oscar board or whatever the nomination to reject that movie. It's called Foxtrot. And I'm telling you, if there is a fake story, that is one. And it's been, you know, known already on the ground in Israel, but I want you guys all to know that. Now let's keep on going. We have a lot of things that we want to talk about that's a little different. Good news of today. But before that, I want you to listen to Frank Sinatra, one of the best, Impossible Dreams. Let's listen to him.
To dream the impossible dream, to fight the unbeatable foe, to bear with unbearable sorrow, to run where the brave dare not go, to right the unrightable wrong.
All right, that was, God bless his soul, Frank Sinatra, one of the men that made this world incredibly interesting, beautiful, and music savvy. We miss him terribly. Now, let's keep on going. What about the possible dreams? I remember 2003, we had Judge Moore had a scenario which he had to remove the Ten Commandments from the courtroom. I remember I was in America. I was shaken. I was broken. I couldn't believe they will do so much force to move the Ten Commandments. And I saw those people lying down on the ground crying, and I was crying because it was like, why are you doing this? This is our faith. We trust. We want the Ten Commandments are used for everybody. And they say, no, this is the law. And I want to ask a question that I asked then, and I'm going to ask now. If you come before the court and you swear on the Bible, I swear to tell the truth, only the truth and nothing but the truth, so help me God, while your hand is on the Bible, what is the difference between that and the Ten Commandments outside? Nobody could understand that. I was living in South Carolina. I was so outraged that I decided to run for Senate. People don't understand that when you have a trigger like God, you know, like the unfair, the incredible, unjust move that they made, it triggered people to do right things. And I stood up and I said, I'm sorry, when they talking about God, I am from the Holy Land. I am Israeli. I'm Jewish. I am trusted to pass God's words to you, to everybody. Not because I'm a missionary. It's because this is who I am. I was born in the Holy Land. So I stood up, scared like nothing you can imagine. I was shivering. I was alone. And of course, all my friends thought, oh, that girl, she's crazy. What do you mean you're running for Senate? Yeah, I'm smart enough. I can carry you. And sure enough, I did. But it was because of Judge Moore. And I respect him. And yesterday, when he had the race for his life to the Senate against all odds and against a sitting president who come to campaign against him, I was like, Donald Trump, it was working with God. How you can even think that you will lose? And sure enough, Bannon, the advisor of Mr. Donald Trump, He said that will be a day of reckoning for the president and Karl Rove, that it did it, that they did stood on the wrong side of God. He didn't say God, of course, but we mathematically we understand that. So let's listen to what Banner said. You know, Islam, everybody, there was a Main Street rally before he even knew that Judge Moore is going to win. So let's listen to him. It's number 10 for us. Let's listen.
Why is the world's media here today? Like Nigel said, why are they here? Why are the Financial Times of London, the BBC, NHK? You know why? Because tomorrow is going to decide who has sovereignty in the United States of America. Is it the elites in Washington, D.C. with their money, or is it the people at Alabama with their muscle? Mitch McConnell and this permanent political class is the most corrupt and incompetent group of individuals in this country. Let's have a serious discussion of what's going on here in Alabama. They've raised $30 million to Judge Moore's, what, two or three? And they've spent $30 million. They did not come down here to Alabama to have a reasoned discussion with you, to have a debate with you, to have any kind of talk about the issues of immigration, the issues of trade, anything that's important today, America's commitments throughout the world. What they did is spend $30 million to destroy a man. Now, is that money going to work? No! They didn't have enough smarts to do it in a sophisticated manner. They took out 30-second TV spots. You know why? Because they think you're a pack of morons. They think you're nothing but rubes. They have no interest at all in what you have to say, what you have to think, or what you want to do. And tomorrow, you're going to get an opportunity to tell them what you think of the elites that run this country. Remember, these are the same people that have tried to destroy Donald J. Trump from the first day he announced for office. At $30 million versus three, it's a spending of 10 to 1. And by the way, for Mitch McConnell and Ward Baker and Karl Rove and Stephen Law, all the instruments to try to destroy Judge Moore and his family, your day of reckoning is coming. But more important, for the donors who put up the money and the corporatists that put up the money, your day of reckoning is coming too. You got to remember something here, folks. This is a business model that works. The corporatist, donor, consultant, K Street, lobbyist, influence peddler, politician class. Washington, D.C., 7 of the 9 richest counties in the country surrounded. Since the first time of the discovery of the silicon chip, the per capita income in Washington, D.C. is higher than Silicon Valley. It's a business model that works, because every year they get to spend $4.2 trillion of your money that's going to be a burden on your kids, grandkids, and great-grandkids. These folks are at very good. They do one thing right. They know the price of everything, but the value of nothing. And they know the value, excuse me, the price of Luther Strange. It's $30 million. They weighed and measured Luther Strange. And at the end of the day, it was $30 million that bought him. He sits there and treat you like a bunch of fools. He says, I'm going to Washington, D.C. to stand up to Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell owns him lock, stock, and barrel. Now, people have asked, why Sarah Palin and Phil Robertson and Nigel Farage and Mark Levin and Mark Meadows and Dr. Savage. I could go on and on. Laura Ingraham, right? On and on and on of the people that support Judge Moore and not the candidate that Donald Trump is backing. Well, that takes a moment of reflection. Remember, all the people I named are not sunshine patriots. They've been with Donald Trump from the beginning. These are the hardest core backers of Donald Trump with no give up. I'm here as a private citizen today, not as a CEO of the campaign. I haven't worn this jacket since we're on the campaign. I came to you unshaven, unkempt, in this old bomber jacket, exactly like I was on the campaign. All the folks I talked about are the hardest core supporters of Donald Trump, and I apologize to Plutarch and to Shakespeare as I do a riff on them, but we did not come here to defy Donald Trump. We came here to praise and honor him. The opposition party right there, the media, they're nothing but the running dogs of the elites of this world. Just like Judge Roy Moore, they didn't come for Donald Trump to have a discussion about immigration. They didn't come and have a discussion about trade. They didn't have a discussion about America's place in the world. No, they were out to destroy Donald Trump personally. Donald Trump has billions of dollars. He was almost 70 years old. He has a lovely wife, terrific kids, friends that you just can't imagine the friends this guy has. He had the perfect life. And why did Donald Trump, at almost the age of 70, run for president of the United States? I saw him up close. It was not for any glory. It was not for any kind of adulation. Donald Trump ran for president of the United States because of his duty to this country. Donald Trump is one of the most courageous individuals I've ever seen, and I've seen it up close. When they try to destroy him every day, it wasn't a debate about his policies. It was about the politics of personal destruction. And every day in Washington, D.C., it's the same thing. How tough do you think it is to get his agenda? Now, we got a cute phrase, drain the swamp, okay? But the enemy we face is not cute, and we're not going to do it with slogans. We're just not going to do it because we wish it away. You're going to have to fight every day to take Washington back, and by taking Washington back, take the control of your own lives back. Every person in this country should get down every night and thank God Donald Trump is president of the United States. You know, I was CEO of the campaign. I came into 88 days to go. We were down 16 points. We were losing in every battleground state, and we won. And you know why? We laid out a populist, nationalist, conservative message. Populist because it's anti-elite. Because those fools in Davos and Washington, D.C. are totally incompetent and corrupt. Nationalist because we're anti-globalists. We believe in America first, and what's good for this country is good for its citizens. And conservative because we totally reject the progressive movement and what it stands for. Yes. They talk about hate speech. Let's talk about economic hate crimes that have been done on the working men and women in this country. They've gutted this country. They've gutted the manufacturing jobs and shipped them overseas. You know what for? For profit. You think this opioid crisis just came about? There's a direct correlation between the factories and jobs that were shipped to China and the workers left behind with total despair. I saw in this campaign, the way we won was we had a candidate that was the greatest public speaker since William Jennings Bryan, Donald J. Trump. And we had a lot of common sense of where we had to go, and audiences like you in Ohio and Iowa and Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan. We did something nobody ever thought could be done. A conservative candidate could win the upper Midwest. We won it in over 300 electoral votes. But I will tell you, on the day of November 8th, I knew it was divine providence that helped us win. And if you think of something else that's providential, think about tomorrow. This is Jeff Sessions' seat that we're going to fill. Yes. Jeff Sessions, a son of Alabama. He's one of the finest men I've ever met. He's pure of heart and tough as boot leather. He is the man with the most integrity in Washington, D.C. He's also a man that Mitch McConnell and all the elites, the permanent political class, despise. Because unlike Luther Strange, he can't be bought. There's no price that Jeff Sessions can be bought. I'm proud to call him my mentor. I'm proud to call him my brother. We have worked on this project for many, many years. Jeff Sessions is the spiritual father of this movement. He's the original populist and nationalist in this country, and we owe him a great debt of gratitude. The people in Alabama, I ask you tomorrow to keep that in mind when you walk into the voting booth. Remember whose seat that Judge Moore is going to replace. It's Jeff Sessions, one of the most unique men. Forget politicians, one of the most unique men in our country. Another unique man is Judge Roy Moore. Now, Judge Moore is not perfect, okay? Judge Moore does not claim to be perfect. Judge Moore rose to national prominence because he put the Ten Commandments for all to see. And according to these folks, according to the mainstream media, according to the global elites, that's virtually a capital crime. Now, Judge Moore knows that the Ten Commandments is the basis of the Judeo-Christian West. And Judge Moore understands and knows that according to the Judeo-Christian West, man is imperfect. Judge Moore has never claimed anything else. And by the way, we're not always going to agree on every topic and every subject. Laura Ingraham, Mark Levin, Sean Hannity, Rush Limbaugh, Dr. Savage, Mark Meadows, Jim Jordan, Steve Bannon. We don't all agree on everything, but we agree on the basics. Judge Roy Moore is a good man, he's a courageous man, and most importantly, he's a righteous man. Now, Phil Robertson is going to be up here in a second. He's someone that knows... Phil Robertson knows the good book a lot better than I do. But one thing he does understand is Ecclesiastes. People say, why are we so divided? Why are we not united? Well, there's a time and season for everything under heaven. And sometimes there's a time for peace. And sometimes there's a time for war. We're not going to hug out our differences. We're going to have to fight for our differences. Now, we're going to fight at the ballot box. We're going to fight in opinion pieces. We're going to fight by talking to our neighbors. We're going to fight by the lived experience of our lives to show other people this is the right way to live. This is the right way to be an American. This is what being an American citizen's about. They talk about divisions, and being a nationalist is divisive. Economic nationalism is what's going to pull us together. It does not matter your race, your color, your ethnicity, your gender, your religion, your sexual preference. It matters that you're a citizen of the greatest republic in the history of mankind. The elites are not going to have an option anymore of economic hate crimes against the people of this country. Those jobs are your jobs. There's a time for everything, and there's a time to fight. And tomorrow, there's a time to decide. Alabama, tomorrow, gets to show the entire world, not just the nation. You get to show the BBC, you get to show the NHK in Japan, CCTV in China, the Guardian newspaper from England, the Times of London, all of them, New York Times, the Washington Post, the entire fake news industry. You get to show them that this populist, nationalist, conservative movement is on the rise. And Judge Roy Moore represents your values. He represents the state of Alabama's values. Because remember one thing. When you walk in that voting booth tomorrow, a vote for Judge Roy Moore is a vote for Donald J. Trump. And a vote for Donald J. Trump is a vote to make America great again. God bless you, Alabama. God bless you.
All right, Alabama, you got Judge Roy Moore. Incredible, incredible. Life is fantastic. That's a poetic justice. It's poetic justice. They started it a long time ago. It was 2003 because I lived that. And now it's 14 years later and we are sending him to the Senate. God bless you. God bless you for everything that, you know, Bannon said. Look, listen to what this man was, you know, is saying. I never heard a speech like that before from him, and he was supporting Donald J. Trump all along, and they put him on the wrong team. I can't believe it. But you know what? Donald Trump should have known better, because when you have COD in play, you never stay on the other side. That's so, you know, it's mathematic, you know. The guy is godly. He works, you know. Of course, you can force when you use routine like they use in 2003 to remove the Ten Commandments. They use everything in the book to justify it. It was bad time for America because they wanted to get God from the Pledge of the Legion. They wanted to take off God, under God. I couldn't believe it. I said, what the next? They want to scrape it from the dollar. And I know that Donald J. Trump is working on the dollar now these days. I hope that they understand that it's not about the money. Like, it's about what America stands for. And right now it means like we are dismantling everything that we believe in for so long. And being here from the Holy Land, I only can pray. I can only pray for you all to get America back on track, to make her great again. Yes, for sure. Now, I'm going to give you a few minutes from Nigel Farage's speech in Alabama in support of Roy Moore. So you can have, a twinkle of whatever he said, because he's really a great guy, and he's a guy of God too. So we're seeing those people, those personality coming around, even across the universe, you know, to come and help in God's name. Let's say the truth. So let's listen to Nigel Farage. It's number four for us.
Evening, Alabama! Thank you. Do you know, it was Saturday just gone. It was 6 p.m. at home. I'd cut the grass. I was thinking about having a drink, and the phone rings. It's Steve Bannon. He says, could you come to Alabama tomorrow? Because we'd like you to put your voice behind a true, genuine conservative in the shape of Judge Roy Moore. And I had to think about it. Do you know, it took me a whole 10 seconds to decide to drop everything and come here to be with you this evening. And I came all this way because what is going on here with this vote tomorrow isn't just important for Alabama. It isn't just important for the Republican Party. It isn't just important for the United States of America. It's important for the whole global movement across the West that we have built up and we have fought for. And a movement that led the year of 2016 into being the great historic year that it was. You know, in 100 years to come, 200 years to come, people will look back on 2016 as the year when ordinary people, decent people, ignored people, people who've been despised by the political establishment, decided in 2016, you know what? We've had enough. And we're going to start voting for change. And we did it, didn't we? We did it. We in the United Kingdom, we overturned the direction that our political class and liberal media had taken us in for 50 years. And we voted against all the lies we'd been told by the big businesses. We voted against President Obama, daring to tell America's best ally in the world that we'd be at the back of the line. And we voted Brexit. And if that wasn't enough to give the global liberal media severe indigestion, then a few months later, something happened on the 8th of November in the United States of America that has made them feel pretty sick ever since, and that was the election of Donald J. Trump. But folks, a year on from those great victories, we are facing some very considerable problems. The liberal media now hate anybody with conservative values in a way that I don't think we've ever seen before. There are others on the left who are turning increasingly away from democratic process and towards violent, unpleasant, nasty protest. We see some on the left who now even want to rewrite history, tear down statues, and pretend we're different people to who we are. We see an attempt through the educational system, through our colleges and universities, to stop teaching young people that in a democracy there are two respectable sides to an argument, as they try to shout down and drown out those of us that believe in conservative values. We have real problems. The establishment, a year on, are doing all they can to undo those great successes of 2016. And we have to stand firm and be of resolve. We have to go on fighting. But there is a problem that is even greater than the violent left-wing protesters and their supporters, or those at least that turn a blind eye to them in the liberal media. We have an even bigger problem out there, and that problem are those people who in theory purport to support our aims and purport to support our views. Our problem is that so many people who are part of the conservative movement on both sides of the pond are in fact career politicians, dominated by what is in their own interests. And they know the closer they stay.
Well, that was Nigel Farage. He was talking about Roy Moore and in Alabama. He traveled from England just to share his views. And his points are very well taken. Just think about what he just said, that most of the people that are on the conservative side, on the elite side, the one that actually manage the world, they are career politicians. They actually have one thing in common. They want to survive and they want to sit and get paid for their work or not work or lack of work, if we can say. And the world has to go on, handle itself. And it's about time that we start having people that actually care about the world. It's about time that we have people that take care of the poor. We have the resources. It's the only thing that some of them are really greedy and want to accumulate so much. Because if you look at the economical part of the world, you understand that much of the money is only in a few percentage of the world. So we need to address that. Now, Roy, Judge Moore went to Alabama voting poll on his horse. So hoo-ha for that. That was awesome. Looking good, talking good, and God bless him. So I'll vote always to keep him in play, because I think that great things are happening. And yes, as Mr. Bannon says, it's divine providence, as Donald Trump won, and it's divine providence that Roy Moore won. Don't know what Donald Trump did on the other side, but I guess that it was a squeeze from Mitch McConnell, or he wanted to play with a party, but it didn't work this time. Anyway, let's keep on going. A few minutes ago, we were talking about, in the beginning of the show, we were talking about the fact that the Palestinian Authority got into the Interpol. And sure enough, we have to understand that Benjamin Netanyahu respond that actually it's not according to the agreement that already signed. So let me wrap it up today and tell you that I love you. I miss you. I miss talking to you every day, but I hope that you wait for next Wednesday and call me anytime you want. God bless you. I hope that you have Gmar Chatima Tova to all my friends, the Jewish faith, and to the world to come. May God give us some grace to handle all this. God bless you all. All the best. Ciao, ciao.